Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our Information Please party. Our board of experts tonight consists first of our two regulars, the encyclopedic John Kieran, editor of the Information Please Almanac, and his gifted colleague, the one and only Franklin P. Adams. The first of our two guests is the famous actor and co-author of Life with Father, as well as many other plays, Mr. Howard Lindsay. And our second guest is our good friend and one of the great maestros of radio, Mr. Fred Allen. That okay, Mr. Allen?
Yes. What is radio? You might explain what that is.
Well, we're still working on it.
Then explain what I am, too. Be an evening's worth.
In the course of the half hour, you'll get to know Mr. Allen better. How about this one, gentlemen, from Lillian Decker of Hollywood, California. Get all on this. Very social question. In what American city, gentlemen, is the socially prominent area associated with this physical feature, a bay? The socially prominent area is associated with a bay. I'll take Mr. Allen first.
San Francisco.
Do the socially prominent people live around San Francisco Bay, Mr. Allen?
That I don't know. I just guessed. You just wanted to guess.
It's an awful big bay, and I think an awful lot of people live
around. Well, there's some pretty big people in San Francisco.
True. But I'll tell you who lives around the bay mostly. Restaurants. The Fisherman's Wharf.
Yeah. The DiMaggio's have a flounder that they've been selling for years.
Maybe the DiMaggio's socially prominent.
Miami.
I beg your pardon?
Miami, Florida.
Miami, Florida.
Yeah, Biscayne Bay.
I don't know where the socially prominent Miamians live, but there is a beautiful bay there. Mr. Lindsay?
Why don't we set up for Boston back there?
Why, of course. That's the one. Mr. Allen, aren't you a Bostonian?
Well, not from the Back Bay area, no.
The Somerville area.
How, Mr. Allen, how far back of Back Bay... you come from?
Well, I heard about the Back Bay when I was about 21, and then I left Boston immediately when I found out how the other half were living up there. It was rather...
Was that a voluntary exit of yours from Boston?
No, I was helped by some men in a rail.
Citizen. Well, I'm going to call... Mr. Lindsay, of course, is right. I'm going to call the other two wrong, Mr. Allen, Mr. Adams.
You're going to offend a lot of people in San Francisco.
I know. It's going to be tough. How about this? What American city is the elite, that's another word, associated with a lake? The rich folks live around a lake. Lake dwellers. Mr. Adams.
Michigan.
Well, now,
Lake
what
Michigan.
City? What city?
Yeah, Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago. All right. Now limit yourself to one city, Mr. Adams. What's the area called that's kind of swell in Chicago?
The North Shore.
The North Shore. Good enough. Comment?
I was born on the South Side.
I never heard of a comment more unnecessary. How about, in what American city is the socially prominent area associated with a creek? A creek.
Indians.
I beg your pardon? Creek Indians? Well, they were the first settlers, of course, but I don't think that they're socially prominent. Mr. Kieran?
Washington, D.C.?
Yes, what?
Rock Creek.
Rock Creek Park. Isn't that the place where the well, folks live.
That's what they're saying. When creek meets creek, is that what they...
Very good. By the way, Mr. Allen, is crick all right as a pronunciation?
I think it is in certain parts of Tennessee and up in the hills. But it refers to something to do with the back rather than the small animated body of water, as I recall.
Well, it might be a back creek.
Yes,
sure.
The Back Bay might have started from a small creek.
Maybe it did. Creek in the back. Now, I think we're sufficiently balled up to pass on to the next question. I'm going to send 24 volumes of the encyclopedia to Miss Decker. Now, remember that Back Bay is the one. Now, let's go on with this one. Oh, here, gentlemen, I must introduce this. I have here a letter from Mr. Harpo Marx of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Mr. Marx, as you know, does not speak, but... he's recently learned how to write. And this is addressed to you, Frank, and the other experts. Dear Frank and experts, I don't know why he makes that distinction.
He knows me too well.
About 10 years ago, I thought up a question, which I sent to Information Please for you experts to answer because I wanted a set of those 24 books. You answered all my questions, so I didn't get the books. I still need them. I'd like to send you another question, but I can't think of any. But I got an idea. The grammar here is improvable. Maybe you can use the same question. If this time the experts are dumb, I may get those books. Please ask Dan Golenpaul if he still has the question around. That's all. Harkle. Well, Mr. Golenpaul does have it around. I have it here. 10 years later. Here we go. Answer all parts. Answer the following questions about games and contests. What game is played with one hand? What game is played with one hand? Mr. Kieran?
Handball.
Handball.
One-hand handball.
Well, don't you have to pick up the ball with the left hand first in order to get it started?
Never use your left hand? You can drop
it
and hit it with the same hand.
You can. Okay, I'll take it. What game is played with one foot? With one foot. This is a very bright audience, but I'm going to ask you to keep quiet. One foot. Mr. Kieran.
Well, football.
Hunting.
Oh, now, football with one foot. You have to run with two feet.
Oh!
No, I mean, you never use more than one foot, sir, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Lindsay.
Hopscotch.
Ah, good boy. Good little boy, I should say.
Oh,
yes,
thank you.
I wouldn't say so.
Hopscotch?
No, when you come to the end and turn around and start back again, you can put both feet in the end zone.
How long is it since you played hopscotch?
About 30 years. They changed the rules. Have they changed the rules?
30 years. You must have been the oldest hopscotch player in the world. I'm not sure, Mr. Kieran. You may be right. I'm going to take hopscotch, though. I don't like to mention this among just us men, but how about footsie?
Footsie? You use both feet.
Oh, do you? With your shoes off. What game is played entirely off the ground? Entirely off
billiards.
The ground. Billiards? Billiards? Well, it may be the way you play it.
I play it on the table. That's off the ground.
No, but I know that you don't keep your feet on the ground generally, Mr. Adams, but you do have your feet on the ground. You don't always sit on the table. Mr. Allen.
Water polo.
Oh, you clever boy. That's
really
good. Yeah, that's very good.
But at the bottom of the whole thing, there's ground.
Don't mention it. You know, I don't think we got perfect on that. You know, it might be a good thing for Harpo to get 24 volumes of the encyclopedia.
I think he can use them.
Oh, you can't tell. If he gets the encyclopedia, he may be able to dig out another question for us. So ring out those wild bells for Mr. Harpo, Mark. Mrs. L.I. Thayer of Chicago asks you to recite lines from different sources, songs, or poems that mention three foods that a dieting woman should avoid. Now, you know what a dieting woman should avoid. Food. But specific ones. Mr. Kieran.
Potatoes are cheaper, butter is cheaper, and now's the time to fall in love.
That's very good. Is it, it's butter, of course.
You can put anything in there you want. Put the expensive, rich foods that add calories.
That's right. Any other? No, you all know lots of things that anyone should avoid if one wants to get slim. Mr. Allen?
Cake, Kaiser.
I beg pardon?
Cake, Kaiser.
I get it, yes. I just lost in admiration.
Amazing.
Mr. Kieran.
She was bred in old Kentucky.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's very good. Mr. Adams.
Peas porridge hot.
Porridge, I suppose. That's got cream and stuff. And Mr. Allen?
It's lovely.
When the roll is called up yonder.
Beautiful.
What will we eat with our coffee? There's a finish to it.
Then there's that little line by Ogden Nash. Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. But both liquor and candy are... Oh, yes, we have no bananas. Oily to bed, oily to rise. Never mind. Try this from Seymour Miller of Chicago, Illinois. A geographical question. This is the sort of thing that Mr. Adams is a shark at.
Yes.
Arrange these cities from east to west. Perhaps we first better explain what east and west are, Mr. Adams. Where we are, roughly speaking, is east. Now, going west, I'm going to ask you to arrange these cities in the order of their westernness, as it were. Here are the four cities. Fort Worth, Texas. Detroit, Michigan. Des Moines, Iowa. Birmingham, Alabama. Which is the eastest and so forth. Now, one man has to answer this whole question, get it all right. I'll choose any one of you four who's intrepid enough to volunteer. Shall I? Would you like to have the names of the towns read again?
Yes.
Certainly. Fort Worth, Texas. Detroit, Michigan. Des Moines, Iowa. Birmingham, Alabama. Range them from east to west. Any error?
Gee, that's tough. Anybody want to try it?
Mr. Adams.
I think Birmingham is east.
You just keep going.
Is that right?
Oh, no, I'm not going to tell you. You arrange your four cities.
And what is the other ones? Detroit?
Well, of course, I can give you some easy ones like San Francisco.
Detroit? Detroit? What?
You've got Detroit, Des Moines, and Fort Worth to fit in.
Des Moines is north of all of them.
Now, that's another question. That's good. That information will come in very handy at some other evening.
Fort Worth is west.
West of what? West of what?
Westernmost.
Okay. Now, we've got Des Moines north. I'd rather have you just arrange it in the terms of its westernness, if you don't mind.
Westernness is Fort Worth.
I know that. Now, suppose we begin from the beginning. You've got Birmingham as the most eastern. Is that right? What's the one next west to that? Detroit, Des Moines, or Fort Worth?
Fort Worth. West.
All right. And how about Detroit and Des Moines? Where do you fit them in?
I would put Detroit north of Des Moines.
Well, you know, this Adams is no fool.
That's right.
He's very slippery. All I care about, Mr. Adams, is what is their position with respect to their westernness, not their northernhood.
Oh.
See? Now I'm all balled up myself. I don't know. Mr. Kieran, would you like to straighten us out here?
Well, no, I know that in the north...
Oh, no, we have that. We have that. Never mind how north they are.
No, I'm not going to mention
but don't how use
north
the word.
They are, but I mean, this continent, this North American continent is slantwise. It's tilted way off to the east.
According to Adams, it's cockeyed.
So I'd like to have a map in front of me as I went over there.
Look at Adams, that's a
But I know Fort Worth is pretty far west.
I don't think you're doing any better than
that. I think Des Moines is probably the most westerly. Fort Worth might be next.
You know, I don't see how this country keeps together with citizens like you. No, I'll give you the answer, John. You're a little balled up here. Detroit is the most eastern one. Birmingham, Alabama, is the next further west one. Des Moines, Iowa, is the next further west one. And Fort Worth, as Mr. Adams said, is the westernmost of all. Mr. Adams, which is the most eastern? You see? Short memory. Okay, Detroit, Birmingham, Des Moines, Fort Worth. I don't know if there are any more encyclopedias left. We're going to give a set to Mr. Miller of Chicago, Illinois. And now let's pause for a message from our announcer. Thank you, and now back to our question. Robert Nevins of Danbury, Connecticut, asks you to name these people who were active in sports or in the theater. Each of them has a chief claim to fame. Get two out of three. This one's chief claim to fame was that Babe Ruth couldn't get a hit off him, or rarely did so, at any rate. Mr. Kieran.
That was a left-handed pitcher. He's now practicing in St. Louis, and he's a very good doctor.
That's right.
Hugh Pruitt.
Yeah, Doc Pruitt. Is
That's
he a doctor
right.
or a dentist?
I believe he's... I don't know which he is.
I think he's a dentist. I may be wrong here. Doc Pruitt, why couldn't Babe Ruth get a hit off him?
I don't know. He had... It was psychosomatic, maybe. He had him jinxed, anyhow.
No.
He had a great big wide hook, as they used to call it, a big curve. And he baffled Babe a few times, and really it was humorous to see what he did to him. I think he struck him out 11 times in 13 tries.
Is that so? Psychosomatic, eh?
That's right.
Ruth was called a lot of things, but he was never called psychosomatic. Now, this one's chief claim to fame was that he was the best bad actor in the world. Mr. Lindsay.
I said that was Corse Payton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did he bill himself as the best bad actor?
The best bad actor in the world.
Mr. Lindsay.
Brooklyn.
He was a Brooklyn. Played for the Brooklyn Stock Company.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, Mr. Lindsay, though I really, this seems a tactless question to ask of you, who are so good an actor, is it hard to be a good bad actor?
Is it hard to be a good bad actor?
Yeah.
It's hard to be a successful bad actor.
I mean, Payton must have had a specific, Mr. Allen.
It's hard to admit it. It's...
how about this one? His greatest achievement was that he gave Jack Dempsey the most trouble in Dempsey's pre-championship days. I've never heard of this fighter, but Mr. Kieran has.
Fat Willie Meehan.
Yes. Willie was his middle name?
What?
Christened Fat, was he?
No, he was christened Meehan, but he earned the fat part.
By the sweat of his brow?
By not sweating enough. He fought two four-round bouts with Dempsey, I think, in the early Dempsey days. Yeah. And after that, he had enough brains left to keep away from Dempsey for a lifetime.
Good enough. That's absolutely right. Well, gentlemen, did very well on that. Now, gentlemen, I'm going to give Mr. Kieran a rest on the next question. Mr. Kieran, you will agree to be out of this except to act as a judge, because Mr. Kieran himself has prepared the next question for the three of you. Mr. Kieran's written another book called An Introduction to Birds. All of whom he knows socially.
You mean that?
And he has sent this book to all the members of our panel tonight. And he'd like to know if they've taken the trouble to read the book. So he's prepared a question based on the contents of the book. And here it is. Now, Mr. Kieran, you just keep quiet until the very end, and then you can come in and judge this if you wish. Here are some questions about baseball that can be answered by giving the names of birds. For instance, if I asked you what you would do if you were at bat and the pitcher let one go at your head, your answer would be, give the name of a bird.
Flycatcher.
Oh, heaven. In your mouth. That's right. We're going to get our ornithology pretty well bollocked up here. Now, that was just an example. That doesn't count, Mr. Adams. The pitcher is, let's fly with a ball right at your bean, you see. What would you do? You wouldn't open your mouth and catch the ball.
No, I'd trot along to first base.
Mr.
Duck.
Duck, yes. That's the name of a bird. Mr. Allen there represents a sobering influence on this program. now that was just a for instance, see? Now here come the real questions. What are we going to do with Adams, Mr. Kieran, on this one?
Looks like he'll win one.
He win, do he? How about this? Now, there's a bird family that has some of the qualities of the DiMaggio family. I don't say they can hit as well as DiMaggio, but if there's anything in the name, they ought to be helpful in any outfield. What birds are those?
The flycatcher.
Atta boy.
Useful fellow.
You know, John, he doesn't need an introduction
to birds.
How do you think the birds would like him if they were introduced to him? Here's another baseball question Mr. Kieran's doped out for us. You all know the Brooklyn Dodgers are famous for doing odd things on the big league diamond. Now, what bird or birds, judging from their names, might fit in with a pattern of baseball for which the Dodgers are famed? You know the kind of baseball they sometimes play. Now, what sort of bird would answer that description? Now, we're through with flycatcher, Adams. I don't want to... it is hard. Unless you've read Kieran's book, which I see you haven't done.
Well, I'm a member of the Audubon Society, and I don't know. I don't even know where the Audubon Society is, and I don't know.
Well, that's a fine ad for the Audubon Society.
It is. To keep the likes of me out, it's a great ad for me.
Isn't it true, Mr. Allen, that you are a bird fancier of a small sort yourself?
Well, I know a few of the California birds, like the stucco-pecker, because it's... There's no wood out there for the woodpecker, so it pecks stucco in that area.
Know any others? Maybe we can fit this in somehow.
No.
All right, Mr. The kind of birds that would sort of fit in with the Dodgers' pattern of baseball might be, says Mr. Kieran, a cuckoo.
Cuckoo.
Get it? No. Or a loon. Get it?
Alone, no, yes.
Alone. Or I would add, Mr. Kieran, a booby. Isn't there a bird known as a booby?
That's right. That's a southern bird. They don't come as far north as Brooklyn.
Okay. Now, that's one wrong. Of course, they may never read your book anyway, John.
After this, the sentiment's going to be against it, I think.
let's try this third one, Mr. Allen. Now, if you were a manager, a big league manager, of course, and you had a good pitcher opposing you, who happened to be a poor fielder, what strategy would you use to upset him? The answer must be the name of a bird. What strategy would you use? What would you suggest that the batter do? Isn't that what it means, Mr. Kieran? Mr.
Bunt.
Is that a bird?
I don't know. If John will make it one, it
is. Mr. Kieran?
Well, it's very close. I think he knows.
Bunty?
Ah, the participle of bunt, yes. As soon as the bird becomes a participle, it's okay. Bunting. What sort of a bird is a bunting, Mr. Kieran?
Well, in different parts of the country, we have different colored ones. Our one here is an indigo bunting. It's a real dark, bluish-purple bird. Male is, anyhow.
Yeah.
Female couldn't play in that game.
In what game?
In the
Dodgers game.
Baseball. No. Mm-hmm. But didn't have enough color.
Not enough color. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're supposed to
Bunting
all...
can make flags out
they
of
might,
it, too, don't
they
you?
Might,
you do.
Win
you have enough
bunting.
Bird left over to make the flag out of it?
Yeah. One of those flag catchers that he was talking about.
Oh, that's the Frank catcher.
Yeah. We only got two out of three, Mr. Kieran. What do we do, send you an encyclopedia?
No, they have to give back the books.
I think I have to make some special arrangement about the encyclopedia for Mr. Kieran. He knows the contents
already.
Speaking
of baseball, there are a lot of good pitchers in that book.
Whoa. Oh,
that's very good, Mr. Adams.
Okay. And now let's pause for a message from our announcer. Thank you. We'll resume with a question from Murray Moss of New York City. Mr. Kahn, our pianist, is going to help us on this. We're going to hear three songs played by Mr. Kahn. Can you tell us in each case whether the character referred to in the song is in the dough or out of the dough? In the money or out of the money? Poor or rich, Mr. Allen, in case this isn't clear to you. Let's have the first.
Dough is fine. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Kahn. I have three beautiful, clean, white hands. Suppose I start with Mr. Allen.
Rufus Rastus Johnson Brown.
Yeah, what's the next line?
What are you going to do when the rent comes around?
Mm-hmm. So
what are you going to pay?
How are you going to pay?
How are you going to pay?
Never have a rusty central judgment day.
Well, these gentlemen are older than I, of course. If you want the full lyrics, you better look at them.
That's true, but we had to go
written
to some trouble to get them.
Written by A. Baldwin Sloan.
I beg pardon?
It was written by A. Baldwin Sloan.
It was written... you mean the words?
No, the music.
Oh, the music. Says here, Harry von Tilsa, what did he write, words and music?
He wrote both sometime.
I think he did in this case, too, but I'm not sure.
No.
All right. You've got me intimidated. Well, Mr. Brown in this song is, of course, in pretty bad shape financially,
yes,
Mr. Allen. Broke.
Wouldn't have the trouble today because of the rent ceilings. He probably would be in a better position.
Wouldn't he, though? Mr. Kahn, the next one. Adams.
Would be in the dough.
Ah, why?
Because he's a man that broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
Good enough. Who wrote that?
You got me there.
If I tell you, will you remember it next time?
Yep.
I don't know what advantage that'll be. Song by Fred Gilbert. Remember him?
We're speaking about him coming up.
Fred Gilbert? Yeah, would you boys care to take 10 minutes out for reminiscing? All right. Now the third, Mr. Kahn. Kind of tricky, Mr. Lindsay. Be careful.
It is a little tricky.
Okay.
Depends upon how you evaluate
the
girl.
That's right. Now, you better explain that.
She was a $1 million baby.
Where was she?
Whom he met in the 5 and 10 cent store.
That's right.
By Billy Rose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you can't tell whether she was in the dough or out of it.
No, but he felt pretty. The fellow that's singing the song feels pretty good.
He feels good.
In the dough.
She might be in the dough shortly after the song is over.
He built a cottage for her.
That's true.
If he was in the dough, he'd hardly be around the 5 and 10 cent store, I don't think. Unless...
That's why she had $1 million.
What was he doing in there? I mean, a man with the...
He kept buying china.
I see no reason whatsoever to go work out the plot of this thing.
Well, I might clarify it.
Well, we really don't know whether she was rich or not. I don't know. She might get into the dough, probably.
No point to the question, then.
That's true. Sure. Well, we'll never use this one again. But how about this one from Arnold Chippendale of Camden, Ohio? According to old gags, what is the standard answer to these remarks? Mother says to the little boy, have you taken a bath? What's the answer? Mr. Allen.
No, is there one missing?
Good. That's a remarkably... You know, that little boy is the one who writes the radio shows, I think.
Yes, he's also in television now, too.
How about this one? Doctor says to a man, don't like your wife's looks. What's he say? Doctor says to a man, don't like your wife's looks. Mr. Adams.
I don't like them either.
Good. That's good. Would-be groom, bridegroom, whispers, why did you bring me here? She's ugly, squints, has bad teeth, and is bleary-eyed.
And she has other faults.
You've cleaned it up. Mr.
Yeah, you can talk louder. She's deaf, too.
Good. We haven't had jokes as good as that on this program for years, Mr. Allen. Okay, here's one from Isidore Greenberg of Brooklyn, New York. Who were these women who, according to history or legend, did the following thing? Get 2 out of 3 on this. This one fired rifle shot through playing cards tossed in the air. Who was that? Mr. Lindsay.
Annie Oakley.
Annie Oakley, yes. How in your profession, Mr. Lindsay, Annie Oakley has a definite meaning, doesn't it?
Well, it means a free seat at the box office.
How did it happen to be connected with Annie Oakley?
The ticket is always punched when it's complimentary, and there's a hole through the ticket. So, that relates to the bullet hole through the card, and that's an Annie Oakley.
Absolutely right. 100%.
But not at any of Howard's shows. You don't have them at any of your shows.
How about this one? She took her husband's place at firing a cannon. Who did that? Took her husband's place at firing a cannon. Mr. Kieran.
Molly Pitcher.
At least that's what people say. What's the story about Molly Pitcher, Mr. Kieran?
Well, of course, that was a sort of catch-as-catch-can war in those days. And
when what days?
There were no rules for entrance. Anybody could get in it in the Revolution.
Yes.
It was the Battle of Monmouth, wasn't it?
Battle of Monmouth, right down here in New Jersey.
That's right. They have a racetrack down there now.
So they have a statue to Molly Pitcher, too. Keep it clean.
Used to be a woman with the circus who fired the cannon. The Zaccarinis sometimes when her husband was loaded and the cannon wasn't.
I'm sorry we can't finish the question. That's all we'll have time for. Our best thanks to Mr. Allen and Mr. Lindsay. Let's see. We've paid out 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And before I tell you about our guests for next week, here's a message from our announcer. Next week, our guests will be Harold Stassen and Russell Krauss. Goodbye until next week when we hope you'll all join our Information Please party.